I'm Massimo Bottura.
This is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs.
I mean, the government has to help these people. These are the small businesses. These are the, do you want to live in a world without restaurants? I don't. These are the people we have to, and it's not the big brand names that you have to help. It's these guys and the mom and pops and the people, the young people who have spent their life savings to date on their dream, their restaurant, and it serves the community. And in a lot of places, the restaurant is the community. It's where we gather. Restaurants are the lifeblood of any society. It's where they gather. The Declaration of Independence was drafted in the restaurant down the street from Independence Hall, not in the hall.
The date is March 23rd, 2020, and that, from Los Angeles, is Phil Rosenthal of the Netflix series Somebody Feed Phil, our guest on this special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is a special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. As always, my great thanks to Sam Pellegrino for covering the production costs of these special reports. We would not have been able to deliver them to you without them. This is part one of a two-part Los Angeles check-in mini-series contained within the series of special reports. I hope that's not confusing. Maybe think of it as nesting dolls or something along those lines. But for part one, I thought the industry could use a laugh today, every day right now, really. So I rang up the only civilian I think is as, or maybe even, dare I say it, more in love with the chef world than I am, and that would be Phil Rosenthal. I'm sure most everybody listening to this knows who Phil is, knows about his love for the industry, has seen him on television. Our LA check-in episode two will air tomorrow and features Mary Sue Milliken and Susan Feniger, as well as Chef Dave Barron, and possibly one other guest I've reached out to and hope will be able to join us. So I hope that you will subscribe if you haven't already done that on your preferred podcast platform and join us tomorrow for that. Those interviews are already in the can and they are wonderful. Just a few quick bits of housekeeping before we jump in with Mr. Rosenthal. This is episode number three of our series of special reports. Some of you might have seen a different episode three go up and then disappear a short while later on Friday night. I want to be transparent and honest with all of you, but I really don't want to belabor or get too into the weeds on this one. But I did want to explain. Suffice it to say, I did something I've never done before. I don't see doing it ever again. I still feel very conflicted about it, but I took a showdown. I took a showdown for reasons other than my own. All I can tell you is that it's a very fraught time for everybody right now. It's a very unprecedented time. I think it's a time to be magnanimous. And I decided to make an extraordinary decision, one that I'm sure a lot of my journalist colleagues would be disappointed by, in order to maintain calm above conflict at a time when none of us need conflict. The decision was entirely my own. I own it. It was made voluntarily for reasons I can live with, and I believe it was the adult thing to do under the circumstances, and I think it's best that that's all I say about it, and I'm going to now move on to happier things. I'm starting to hear from a lot of you by email and direct message about these special reports. It's been incredibly humbling, and I wanted to share a little of them very briefly. This one comes from Denise. I'm only going to use first names. Just wanted to drop you a note on how I have been enjoying your podcast. And now with so many of us out there in a total holding pattern, I have time to write to you. Ha, sad but true. I am a chef. My restaurant cut all hourly workers, including me, and went to the takeout delivery format, which we were able to do before. Will that help? Sure. Just a Band-Aid for now, but when it is all left to only the salaried chefs and owners, those are the ones holding down the forts. When I was working, you were my co-pilot while I drove to and from work, picking up tidbits and just how other chefs work out there in the world. Thanks. Keep the faith. That's a very sweet note, Denise. I really appreciate about five different things in there. From Marco, again, just first names. First, I wanted to thank you for your weekly podcast, which are the highlight of my week, and the recent special episodes during this crazy period around the world. As a constant world traveler, this pandemic has altered my usual research and field work as a writer and university professor. I must say that your writing interview style, phrasing, and syntax is quite addictive. That's a high compliment. And has influenced me as I get into podcasting with my colleagues and students. Marco, we were in touch this weekend. Be in touch again if you need to be. Happy to be of service if I can help you with any advice. And this succinct direct message from Matthew on Instagram. Thank you for the daily podcast. Chefs need you now. Well, that's very humbling. And here I am. If you guys need me, I'm here for you. Also, I have to say I've been struggling with the proper tone for these special reports for not the interviews, but for my, you know, these intros, what I'm doing right now. You know, it seemed to me that I should sound really somber, that I should sound the way, you know, when you're a kid or when you don't want to go to work and you try to call in and you make yourself sound a little extra sick, even if maybe you are a little bit sick. It seemed appropriate to me. We put a kind of a somber, alternate theme music on at the top of the show. But is that really what you guys want to hear for 5 weeks? Is that how I can best serve you? I've been debating this. And then I thought of this line from our recent interview with Bo Beck from the Philly Chef Conference.
I don't have kids. And on the other hand, I have 65 kids.
Yeah, right, sure.
And a thing I've learned is kids don't do what you tell them to do. Kids do what you do. I am actually in control of the mood.
Yes.
So if I'm stressing and anxious, then I'm projecting that into you guys. Mm-hmm. So I have to be extremely relaxed.
That gave me my answer. We all know this is a serious time, and many of the conversations we have here on the show will be serious. They'll be deadly serious at some times. But I want this to be a place for relief as well as commiseration. So I'm going to play up-tempo music at the beginning when I feel like it. I'm going to try to be as positive and upbeat as possible during the show. I hope that will not seem inappropriate, but I am doing it because, as Bo was talking about, that is what I want to project into the world right now as much as possible. I hope it doesn't seem insensitive or inappropriate or wrong for the occasion. If it does, at the end of the show, I do tell people how to email me or leave me a voicemail. I would welcome your feedback because this is a fraught time and I want to get it right for as many of you as possible. Can't make everybody happy, but hopefully that's the right decision. Now I want to get to my interview with Phil Rosenthal. Phil needs no introduction. He is the host of Netflix's Somebody Feed Phil, and before that of the PBS series, I'll Have What Phil's Having. He is also the co-creator of the classic sitcom Everybody Loves Raymond, as well as a writer, actor, and bon vivant of epic proportions. I thought it would be nice for all of you to hear from Phil because he loves you as much as I do. And more importantly, or equally importantly, he knows how to make people laugh, and I thought you all could use that right about now. So with that, here's my conversation with the wonderful, the joyous, the hilarious Phil Rosenthal. Phil, first of all, thank you for making time.
What else do I have to do?
I was going to say there's two sides to this, right? One side is you're just sitting around your house because that's what everyone's doing out there.
I'm so busy plotting where I should be buried.
I thought, first of all, you and I both, technically, as much as we love chefs, as much as we spend time in that world, we are what I call civilians, technically.
Of course. Yes, I'm less than a civilian.
I thought, A, the industry could use a laugh and you'd be a familiar voice to do that. And B, I just thought it'd be nice for people, you know, most of our listeners are cooks and chefs and owners, to hear, you know, what we're missing about them right now.
What do I miss? Like, you just mentioned that you're going to have Dave on, and he's the chef of Dialogue and Pajoli, and I haven't been to either, and now I can't get there if I want. So my question for you is, does Dave deliver?
I believe he is doing takeaway. I do not know if they're doing takeaway of the famous, the press duck, which was one of the best things I put in my mouth in 2019.
See, pressed duck is such a perfect item for these times because you can slide it under my door.
Or through the mail slot. Well, that could get messy.
I don't care. Nothing matters anymore. My daughter got up this morning. She said, Dad, can I have key lime pie for breakfast? I said, sure, nothing matters anymore.
No, we're the same with our kids. It's like, as long as they're getting their homework done, we're like, knock your PlayStation homework. All day, Netflix all day. Well, my kids are still in high school. Well, yeah, we're doing remote schooling.
Yeah, that doesn't matter anymore.
You don't think?
Let the kids have fun. Don't you think they're going to be frightened enough by the news? Let them treat this as the best snow day in the world. Let them enjoy themselves. They'll catch up with school. You start to realize what's not important, right? What's important is your family and your friends and staying connected with them somehow through this horror. You want human connection. School is overrated.
I'm a New Yorker. I'm still here. Yeah. You're a New Yorker. You're in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I would imagine, now I live in Westchester County now, and I think maybe for the first time in 5 years, I'm actually happy that I moved to the suburbs because I have a yard. You know, we're not in a 2 or 3 bedroom apartment right. with, you know, 4 grown people and a dog.
Right.
I imagine you're feeling relatively good about if we have to go through this moment about being in not your hometown.
The space is nice, yes, and I'm very, very lucky in that I have a house and a yard. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you follow me on Instagram.
Yes, of course.
You know what I did then on the first day of this whole thing?
I don't. Should I look while we're talking?
We adopted a dog.
Oh, that's great.
We took in a rescue.
How's that been?
Just lovely and sweet and beautiful. You know, I recommend this. You help the puppies. And you rescue a puppy and then he rescues you because you now, it's like having a baby. It's your whole life. All we do is, you know, feed him, play with him, make sure he doesn't pee in the house. That's, we're losing that battle, by the way. But we love this thing. We love this dog named Murray. And everyone should go on the Instagram and just see the Daily Murray. There's pictures of him every day. He's the cutest, sweetest dog. And it's just a way to engage in a loving way with something that's not this stupid virus.
Phil, I have to ask, you came on this show about a year and a half ago, and you were going on and on and on about your love of food and how much you love chefs.
Wow, you make it sound good. Remember when Phil was on and he went on and on and on?
Oh, no, I meant it was great. No, it was like an epic poem. It was like Ulysses. I mean, not Ulysses. It was like the Odyssey. It was the Odyssey of food. But what I was going to say was, I then said to you, are you any good? Do you cook at home? And you said, I'm terrible. I can't. I'm terrible. So now you're homebound. How are you? Yeah. Are you improving your culinary skills?
Well, here, now I have a wonderful excuse. I'm supporting the restaurants that need me to order from them. So I don't have to cook.
So that's what you're doing.
Yes. And by the way, that's only half a joke. I really do want to support.
Of course.
All the restaurants. I really do. There's so many that are doing the delivery and takeout. But I mean, you're talking to chefs more than I am even. You're finding, I'm sure, that it's not the best substitute for being open with real customers in the place, right?
I'm hearing it's most people are telling me it's in the 30-35% range of normal and at best 50%. That's very anecdotal, but that's several.
No,
people.
I think you're right, and it's unsustainable. I already know a couple of places that just said we're going to close until this is over because it's actually not worth it with the cost of food and the manpower. The delivery and the takeout is just not going to work. I know one. A wonderful place that went from a full restaurant with entrees and pastas, Antico. You know about Antico, right?
Yeah.
So he turned it into a pizzeria, basically. And it's phenomenal, but it's pizzas and it's salads and his phenomenal gelatos. And they turned the whole restaurant into that. But who knows how sustainable any of this is?
I know. Have you been doing mostly delivery or do you use that as an excuse to kind of get in the car and get some movement behind you?
The first couple of days I was trying going for takeout. I thought it would be easier on the restaurant and also, quite frankly, gives you something to do.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest, it's nice. There's no traffic. Yeah. So right. You're in your car, you get out, everything's clean, everything's nice. You don't worry about, you know, I'm not sticking around to have interactions really, right?
Right.
You come home, you wash your hands, and the meal is there. Last night I ordered from a place that said we deliver. So I said, oh, let's try that. It took 2 hours.
Well, that's probably a good thing, right? Because that probably means they're busy.
Yes. But it wasn't good for me. I was hungry.
Yeah. So how does the drop happen, Phil? Everybody, you know, we're all terrified of each other. We're supposed to have a 6-foot distance. Is it like a hot, yeah. Is it like a ransom drop in a hostage movie? Like, do they leave it on your porch and leave?
You can. I think every delivery service now offers leave at the front door, right? You can even, if they come to the door, you could say, hey, could you, through the door, could you leave it and you know, well, take care of on the app, or I did already on the app, or whatever it is. You don't have to see a person. But last night I opened the door. The man was there. He's wearing gloves. I took the bags from his gloved hands and went in. He didn't stay. He didn't breathe on me. He didn't, you know, there was no interaction really. Now somebody is probably going to call in and say, nope, still bad, still dangerous.
I mean, not to be a downer, but, you know, germs do survive on gloves. Are better for the person wearing them, I think, than the person interacting with the person wearing them.
Ah, well, I wash my hands.
Yeah. Yeah. I only wash mine about 60 times a day right now.
It doesn't matter. We're all 75% of us are going to get it no matter what we do. I mean, yes, we have to, we shouldn't be stupid and go rave in a club or on the beach like these crazy kids who think they'll never catch anything.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I grew up in Florida and I've been watching my home state with horror during the spring break down there. Just absolute horror.
By the way, Trump is out there and he's got all the people around him and they're all touching the same podium, right?
And the microphone.
They're all there. They're all next to each other. They're all, and it's more, certainly more people than they say you should be with. And you see all the people around them are testing positive. What the hell?
Are you craving particular restaurants right now?
I got to tell you, right at this moment, the selection is huge in Los Angeles. We're very lucky. I don't know if they're just getting rid of their excess inventory and that's going to be it. And then you're on your own. I don't know. I don't know how. What do your chef friends tell you how sustainable this is going to be?
Well, you know, it runs the gamut. One part, so there's a population, I think that, well, I think there is a small population that is doing very well with the takeout thing. You know, I mean, I do need to say at the same time, there are many restaurateurs who don't, you know, think everyone should be closed. You know, I think that depends somewhat on what market you're in, you know, whether people are coming in on public transportation or coming in a car, you know, which seems logically to be a little more safe, you know. But some people are doing, I think, better than the average, better than the curve with the takeout thing. Other people are telling me they're going to do it for as long as it's viable or until they're told they have to shut down because it is something. And then, you know, there are these people who were – I just read a story the other day about the chef of a restaurant here in Westchester who is – his restaurant is closed and he very quietly – he missed cooking so much that he – has started coming in and cooking on his own. Jeff Gordon here just wrote a piece about him on Esquire's website.
He sent it to me. We're friends. And he wrote, it's a beautiful article. It makes you cry because the guy is so dedicated. And these are the people we got to help. I mean, the government has to help these people. These are the small businesses. These are the, do you want to live in a world without restaurants? I don't. These are the people we have to, and it's not the big, you know, brand names that you have to help. It's these guys and the mom and pops and the people, the young people who have spent their life savings to date on their dream, their restaurant, and it serves the community. And in a lot of places, the restaurant is the community. It's where we gather. It's why my show is what it is. It's because restaurants are the lifeblood of any society. It's where they gather. The Declaration of Independence was drafted in the restaurant down the street from Independence Hall, not in the hall.
There you go. Right. With beer.
Come on. You gotta, these are the important things. You know, and it's the biggest chunk of the hospitality industry. They're going to bail out the airlines because they're big businesses. I understand it, and I understand how important it is. But just as important are all of our local restaurants. You want to walk down Main Street with no place to eat on them? That's what's going to happen if we don't really help them.
Well, that sounds like hyperbole, but that is true. I mean, you know, everybody's hurting right now, right? So I think it sounds to people hearing, you know, why don't, you know, people like Colicchio's been out there pushing hard for like a restaurant bailout and stimulus package. And I think people at home hear that and they go, what makes restaurants special? I think one is what you just described, which is they are often the like you said, the lifeblood of their community, the focal point of a community. They offer a vital part of an area's culture. But I think what a lot of people don't understand, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, is, you know, you see a standalone restaurant, right? And maybe it makes several hundred thousand dollars a year, right? Or $1 million a year, let's say. And then you see a standalone fine dining restaurant that makes $3, $7, $10 million a year. And none of that seems all that vital, but when you add up all those restaurants, I just saw this stat the other day. The American restaurant industry represents 4% of what our GDP was last year.
Come on.
So it actually is, you know, you see a standalone restaurant or a couple of restaurants in your town, maybe you don't even go to them, and it seems like, who cares about those guys? I just took a 20% pay cut, or my 401k is in the trash. But the truth is, it is a huge industry taken together.
It's literally our society. It's where we gather. It's our social life. Do you want a social life without restaurants? It's almost impossible to imagine for me. One more thing. I wanted to get your opinion on this because I've heard two schools of thought, and I wanted to know what you're hearing from the chef community. The value of gift cards. Obviously, there's an influx of cash now, but the case against it that I heard was that you're kind of going to be in trouble when everyone comes to cash these in later. I don't know what's best.
I've heard a couple of things about that. One thing I've heard is, well, the most altruistic thing I've heard is some companies, very few, are selling gift cards and giving the proceeds in some fashion I don't even know what we call them, employees right now. They've been furloughed, but you know, somehow passing that on to their staff. I have heard the theory that you're talking about, which is, yes, it's some short-term cash, but you know, when restaurants reopen, that's not going to be new revenue. That money's going to be long gone because they all operate on such slim margins that they will have spent it, you know, like basically the minute it comes in. You know, and then there's restaurants who are doing basically a bond, you know, where you buy it at, I think most of them are doing it at 75% of value. So you, let's say you buy a $75 gift card or gift certificate, the value when you come in will be $100.
That's great for us. I don't know how great it is for them.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously it's people who really need the short-term cash, man. You know, like,
of course.
That's that simple.
Of course, it's like an emergency loan.
Yeah, but the thing, you know, it's like we were talking about the finances and how diffuse it is and how many, you know, I've always said it's amazing to me that, you know, a diner, a Greek diner, a mom-and-pop Italian joint, and a Linea are all considered restaurants, right? Like that's the spectrum. So
me,
it's like if there's, you know, whatever your own situation is, I think if there's people that you want to help, if there's restaurants you want to see open when this is over, just it's as easy as going to their websites or going to every chef's Instagram feed or restaurant's Instagram feed right now. Is showing you how to help them. That's almost all they are right now. There's no vanity food shots right now. It's all, you know, SOS. So I think take the lead and trust the opinion of the individual chef operators and help them how they're asking to be helped, whether that's contributing to their employee relief fund, whether that's buying gift cards and merchandise. That's the other thing, you know, buying their books and their t-shirts and whatever else they're hawking or selling.
Yeah.
I think take trust them to tell you how to help them.
That makes perfect sense. If somebody's in the water drowning, you don't pass them in your rowboat and say, you'd be better off if a bigger boat came by.
Yeah. I mean, whatever they're asking for, I think you do if you can. Have you been as moved as I have been by these restaurant relief funds that people have set up? Have you seen some of the numbers that they're racking up to help their employees get through this? It's pretty amazing.
Lovely. And I'm gonna be doing something very soon. I don't know when this is on, but I'll be announcing something very early this coming week. I want to do everything I can.
This is going out Monday. Where should people look for that announcement?
My Instagram. I'll just put it on my Instagram because I think that's where I have the most followers. And hopefully other people will follow suit. I want people to get involved. I want people to, understand that things could go away. Now, I understand that their immediate health is the main concern, and of course it is. But after that, think about the things that you'd like to keep around you in our society. The important things. Yes, education. Yes. Yes, transportation. Yes, of course.
Museums. Yeah.
You could live without restaurants. Do you want to?
Yeah, I think for most people, I mean, again, the famous people out there are just, one small part of this story. It's mostly on top of everything, we're talking about the guest side, right? Because that's us, yeah. Right? But in every restaurant, there's dishwashers, porters, runners, waiters, these people have been doing these jobs since they were kids. They don't even, again, we're talking millions and millions. And I think it's something like 13% of the American labor force work in restaurants. Where are those people going to go? Most of them don't know how to do anything else, to be honest.
I don't know. I just don't know. But we're to pretend we're not in a crisis or is silly. We have to acknowledge it. And then, okay, we've got this problem. How do we solve it? I think I like the idea of everybody staying home for a few weeks, seeing what that does to the numbers, right? If we can mitigate, as they say. Nobody likes to be socially distant, but if that's what it takes to get it done, then we have to do it.
All right. You know any good jokes? You know any good chef jokes?
Chef jokes. No, but here's the philosophy. Here's the philosophy that I think all of us will have. And I think it's encapsulated in this very old and famous joke, which I'm sure you know. Grandma takes her grandson to the beach and they're playing by the water's edge and a big wave comes and sweeps her grandson out to sea, her little grandson. And she starts crying and screaming, God, please don't let this happen. Please bring my beautiful boy back. Please bring my grandson back. I'll do anything. I'll be your devoted follower for the rest of my life. Please, God, I'll do anything. Just bring me back my boy. And another wave comes and washes her grandson up on the shore. And she looks to heaven and says, thank you, God. Thank you. Oh, just one thing. He had a hat.
Man, I've never hear that joke before.
That's what we'll be like when society returns. Yes, this is all very nice, but he had a hat.
All right. Well, on that note, I hope one of these days when this is all over, you and I will be able to have a meal together, either in your city or my city, your old former hometown.
Even if it's not over, what I think will replace eating in person for a while is virtual eating, where you order something, I order something, and then I call you on the video chat, and we eat together that way.
I will tell you that my wife, is working from home now. We actually have a home office, but she didn't want to be with me, all day, every day for months. So we moved her setup down to the rec room downstairs, and I couldn't find her yesterday. It was like 5 o'clock Friday, and I hear this laughter coming from my backyard. She was in the backyard with a bottle of tequila, a glass of ice, and her laptop, and she was having her regular Friday afternoon team drinks with her colleagues from her office.
I love that so much.
And there were like six of them on the
Six people on the Zoom.
Yep.
God bless that thing.
And you know what? It was beautiful. It was beautiful. I mean, it's great. It's weird, and it seems like something out of 2001, A Space Odyssey. But you know,
you think, nah, it won't be the same. It won't be, but it's something.
It is definitely something
to get us through. Right? Thank God for this technology. At the very least, you're not completely alone. I just did, I have a trainer a couple times a week, and I just did I put him on FaceTime, and he put me through my paces, and it was like being there with him.
I hope you're not paying full price for that. No, I'm just kidding.
I'll pay full price. Listen, he's got to eat too. You know what I was thinking about though? I'm really worried for people who like masseuse. A masseuse, what do they do?
Yeah.
You can't do a virtual massage, right? What do they do?
Masseuse, hairstylist.
Yeah.
My kid's orthodontist called today to make sure I knew they were closed because they had an appointment today. He did not sound like a happy camper. I mean,
there's going to be a lot of home haircuts.
Well, I don't know that right? There should be, though. I mean, you're not.
Let's all get shaggy.
Oh, you mean home haircuts? People do it, DIY. You mean people doing it themselves?
Yes, do it yourself because you can't go to the barbershop. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, if I have to do that, I think it'll be like, the boot camp video at the beginning of every Army movie. I'll just cut it all off because there's no way I could give myself a proper haircut.
Well, I just want to say this before I go.
Please.
I know that chefs listen to this, and I want to know how beloved you are and how necessary you are and how important you are. Certainly to me, but I think I speak for a lot of us who aren't on the podcast all the time. Never forget that. And we can't wait to come back. I'm someone who loves to eat out every day. I know I'm a little crazy, but I love the experience so much of going to the restaurant. I love everything about it. I love what people do with different design choices, what people do with menus and how they're laid out and what the offerings are on the menus. And then, of course, the execution of the dishes and how inventive they are and how their artistry is expressed through the food. And then the people, the servers, the staff, the front of the house, even the back of the house. You know, when I'm done, usually I peek into the kitchen and I say, thanks, everybody. I love it so much. I love the operation. You know, to me, I come from the world of theater, right? That's what I studied in school. And I understand you're putting on a show every night. And I know what it takes. And this is the best kind of theater because you can eat it. So it's my love of the game. Some people have sports. I have this. And I couldn't love it more. And I want to wish everyone who's listening luck and love and we'll get through it together.
Great. And we'll be there the first night they open somewhere.
That's right.
All right. Phil, thanks again for making time. I really appreciate it. I'm sure people love hearing your voice and hearing your sentiments.
Thanks, Andrew.
And that's our show for today. Before we go, just a couple of quick things. Dave Barron, Phil was wondering if Dave Barron was doing takeaway. Dave Barron is doing takeaway at both of his Santa Monica restaurants, Pajoli and Dialogue. And on tomorrow's show, when Dave returns, he talks about the approach they've taken to create takeaway menus that are fitting with the sensibility of those restaurants. Anyone who heard our interview with Dave last summer knows that he's an extremely thoughtful, analytical, and creative person. I also think you'll love hearing what he has to say about how they are making decisions as a group in the best interest of their employees at the moment. Also, you know that thing Phil talked about how he goes and thanks kitchen crews on his way out of restaurants. I started doing that myself about a year ago. And I have to tell you something. When places are back open and people are cooking, it's probably not appropriate for most diners to go back into a kitchen without, asking permission. They may not want you to come back there, but there's so many open kitchens right now. If you make your way to an open kitchen and you thank the kitchen crew for a wonderful dinner, tell them dinner was awesome. You only have to say just the fewest words to them. I promise you, it will melt the hearts of even the most hardened looking crew. You will be amazed how easy it is to make cooks feel good by telling them you enjoyed the meal they prepared for you. Finally, I have been inundated, and I am happy to be inundated. I'm flattered to be inundated. I'm just setting up what I'm about to tell you, with requests to promote various support groups and relief efforts at this moment. All of them are worthwhile, and there are people whose work I admire and want to promote who haven't asked for my help, but I feel compelled to offer it. So here's what I've done. I have decided that I'm going to feature one promotion per day in the episode description that runs on the various podcast platforms, for example, Apple Podcasts. Where possible on those platforms, a link will be visible and you can click through and check out those relief efforts, fundraising efforts, petitions, that kind of thing. Also, on the episode page for each episode of this special series of special reports, I will feature a nice big picture of a particular relief effort on each day or a petition or whatever I think is worth sharing that day. And if you click on that picture, it will take you through to that charity, petition, relief organization, whatever it happens to be. Okay, I'll try to get a good mix of those out there. Maybe I'll do more than one a day. I will be playing with that over the next few days. Today's focus is the Restaurant Worker Relief Fund, which Chef Edward Lee, who I admire quite a bit even before this, with support from Maker's Mark, with whom I have no relationship whatsoever, has been setting up around the country. They go to restaurant locations, such as our friend Nancy Silverton's Cheese Spaca in Los Angeles, and they offer food to industry workers who need it at this time out of those restaurant locations. How beautiful is that? I think it's amazing. It is the Restaurant Worker Relief Fund. And if you, again, go to the Apple Podcast or other podcast description on various platforms for this show, where you are allowed to do it, I will have a link that goes through to that. And if you go to the AndrewTalksToChefs.com website, to the episode page for today's show, there'll be a nice big picture of their logo and you can click through and learn more about them and see how to donate to them. I think that's an incredible cause. And by all accounts, it's going really well. Thank you again to Phil Rosenthal for chatting with us from Los Angeles. Please come back tomorrow for episode 2 of our LA check-in with Mary Sue Milliken, Susan Feniger, and Dave Barron. Thanks to Wild Turkey Surprise for today's opening music. To After School Special for the music you're hearing right now. Please seek them out online and enjoy more of their music. Thanks to our engineer, Margaret Kelly, for splicing this show together. Thanks to Sam Pellegrino for making these special reports possible. And I would love to hear from you about any topics you might like to hear covered in these reports or suggestions you have for how they could be better or more useful. Message me at Chef Podcast on Instagram or shoot me an email or voicemail via the links at the bottom of the Andrew Talks to Chefs website pages. Thank you all for listening. Take care of yourselves. Take a breath, and we will all get through this together. See you tomorrow. I see.